Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Hello there, welcome to part one of the big interview with Vinny Samways. Vinny was one of those guests that by the end of our conversation, we were all asking ourselves, how on earth had we not invited him on the big interview before? You probably remember Vinny as a skillful, elegant playmaker in some terrifically entertaining Spurs sides of the late 80s and early 90s. But how much do you know about the leap of faith he took in 1996 to swap top-flight English football for life in the Segunda, the second division in Spain, with Las Palmas? This was a remarkably bold move for a 28-year-old who didn't know where Las Palmas was, but it paid off handsomely. He spent six seasons with the Canary Islands club before moving to Sevilla. In that fourth season with Las Palmas, they were promoted to La Liga, the top. And he went on to face and pump Real Madrid's Galacticos. This is a superb tale of an extraordinarily entertaining football man, somebody who was ahead of his time. For the moment, we're still recording this on Zoom. And just for the first 10 minutes, there are tiny little glitches with Vinny's audio. But do stick with it. It gets better quickly, and he's worth it. Ladies and gentlemen, Vinny Samways on The Big Interview. Listeners, we've got a treat today because, you know, on the big interview, it's not just that we favour people that I admire. We only bring in people that I admire, that have inspired me, whose careers I've loved. But this is a guy who played his football in an era where it wasn't quite so easy to have all the YouTube repeats that you could sort of drool over his skills. But our guest today, Bethnal Green's finest, Vinny Samways, was a ball player in an era when not all the teams in England wanted to hold on to possession. And he's a ball player who eventually found his way to Spain and became really well known. And looking back today, Vinny Samways, welcome to The Big Interview. Whenever I mention you to journalists of a certain age, they don't bring up the stereotypical nonsense, because there was a flurry of cards when you came to Spain. Any Spanish football journalist of my age that remembers you who's like a non-English footballer when you moved over to Las Palmas in the late 90s. And do you get this affection when people talk to you now about what you did at Las Palmas back from around 97 onwards? Do you recognise what I'm saying, that people thought of you as like slightly
an Englishman out of his time, because you played like the Spaniards played today, and the way that Spaniards have won all those trophies to the national team. Do you recognise what I'm saying to you?
Yeah, first and foremost, thanks very much for the interview. To be quite honest, especially in Las Palmas, my kids still get a lot of connections through social media of supporters. And obviously that my kids were young when I went there, so they appreciate it more now. They're older and understand it, but totally. Obviously it was a big risk for me, leaving something very comfortable in the UK and then going to Spain. But I admired Spanish football ever since I've been watching football. And it was always an ambition of mine to want to play there at some stage. And albeit it might have come a little bit earlier than I would have thought in my career. And I can honestly say I thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it. And I've got the utmost respect for the way the Spanish play, conduct themselves. And so it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience.
We're going to come back to a couple of things that I've mentioned that you've mentioned, like your regard for Spanish football. And I'm going to come back and ask you later, well, how the hell? Because it was barely on British television. I'm going to come back to Bethnal Green because it's a place that I'm... Because I remember when I was young, there was a real boxing fan lived opposite us, and he always talked about Bethnal Green and the gyms and the fights. And I know you moved out of there, and Bethnal Green maybe feels in the past, but I'd love to know what initially being a kid in Bethnal Green was like. But when you came to Las Palmas, is one of the Canary Islands. The first thing to say to you is, how hard was it to accept going to the second division? And little did you know, and maybe some of our listeners, and listen, I'm going to forgive our listeners if they don't know the full cast list of the Spanish second division in 1997. And this isn't a test of your memory, because maybe at the time you weren't aware of them. But you moved into a division where at that time, for example, Ruben Baraja, who won two titles with Valencia under Rafa Benitez, was playing there. Vicente, one of the best left wingers of the last 20 years in Spain, was playing there, went on to win a title at Valencia. Monchi, the genius recruiter at Sevilla, was a goalkeeper because Sevilla were in the second division. Lauren, who went on to be an invincible Arsenal, sorry to mention the Arsenal so early in the podcast without mentioning Spurs first, but Lauren, invincible, an Olympic gold medalist with Cameroon, was playing there for Levante. Lopetegui, who won the title with Real Madrid as a goalkeeper, went to the World Cup with Spain as a goalkeeper and is currently Sevilla manager. He was playing there. So two questions. You know, just out of ego, about having played at the best level in England and then you're going to Spain's second division, how hard was that to swallow? And how quickly did the quality of what you were playing in register with you?
For sure, coming down from the Premier League to the Segunda, what had happened when I was... the offer, I'd like to go over for a week to have a look. And to be quite honest, with total respect to the Canary Islands, I didn't know where they was. And I've got on a plane, and when I've been on a plane to Spain before, it's 2 hours, 2 hours, 20 minutes. All of a sudden, we're nearly 4 hours, thinking, where on earth am I going? Like, land at Las Palmas. The club was amazing from the start. And I mean, even the week I was there having a look around. And then obviously they helped me because they got someone, a guy called Antonio de Armas, he's like a director there, but he was he lived in Nottingham for many years, so his English was perfect. And he told me the history of the club. That's predominantly a legal club, had some difficulties for a few years. So the moving down to a division, because they convinced me they were going to be fighting. I wouldn't want to go to a club that are just happy to stay in that second division. They made some very good signings before I arrived. I included Flores, which he went on to La Coruña and them kind of places, did very well. And they had a great structure of bringing young players through. And I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. So, it was realistically in terms of, it was a step backwards in terms of maybe going from Premier League to the second division, but obviously I'm thinking this is short term, because I do believe with what they've got in place we can get up. never easy, and the proof's in the pudding, because it took us a couple of years. So, yeah, it was a risk, but it was one that I was prepared to take. So that was really the start of that. When I first went to, obviously, you've possibly been there, to the Insular, Las Palmas' old ground, it held around 20, give or take, 24, 25,000 supporters. Every other week we played at home, it was full. And it was a typical, it reminded me of the old Upton Park, where if you took a throw in, a fan could touch you on the shoulder. They were that close to the pitch. So, I mean, the first time I played there, I couldn't believe the atmosphere. It was just phenomenal. And the Canarian people's knowledge of football is amazing. Absolutely. They live and die for their club. And I couldn't believe it, because you're talking about an island which is 2 hours away from the mainland on a flight. And I'm thinking, wow, this is proper. And at that time, Barcelona B were in the Segunda, second division, and the likes of Xavi, Carlos Boyo, Gabri, they had some phenomenal players. I'll never forget when I played against Xavi and Co. the first time. I'm thinking, wow, these guys can play. This was like, I mean, a football session. It was like, you have it, we'll have it for 5 minutes. And the pace of the game was totally different, 100% to the Premier League, because at the time when I was playing back in the UK, it was more back to front if possible. Okay, we didn't do that at Tottenham, and possibly the likes of United didn't do it, but majority of teams at the time were back to front. So obviously me going there was obviously not just a culture change, it was obviously adapting to the way they play. But I found it quite easy. It's the way I've always been brought up at Tottenham, of possession football. And so apart from the language barrier, the adapting to the Spanish football wasn't too difficult for me. The heat was phenomenal. It was like, we used to play when we played on the island around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, which again, I couldn't get used to. And the heat was still like 25, 26 degrees. The pitches were, I mean, dry. Like, I mean, even they would soak the pitches 20 minutes before the game at half time. Within 20 minutes, they're dry. And no disrespect, this is why we had some amazing results, and more when we went to the Liga against the bigger side, because that's where Real Madrid come fast, who are going to knock it around for fun. The pitch is wrong. So they want a wet pitch where they can zip it around. And it wasn't that we didn't want it, because we did want it, because we were trying to do the same as what they did. But just because of circumstances and weather, it just dried up so quick. But I mean, it was like a culture shock at the beginning. And I've only ever worn in England aluminiums, because you don't wear rubber studs in England, because maybe pre-season game when it's mid-July and it's baking up. But I mean, Saturday, week in, week out, there's aluminiums, because the pitches are soft. 9 times out of 10, it's raining at some stage. And all of a sudden, I'm playing at home and I'm wearing rubber studs. I'm thinking, well, this is even better. It's like wearing a pair of slippers.
Given how much you like to be on the ball and how you like to use the ball, this slippers thing, does it slightly improve your control or your feel about using the ball?
For me, yes, totally. I feel it's something that you just feel. I felt more in control because you wear aluminiums, and they can obviously, underneath, you can get, your feet can start obviously getting swollen, but with rubber studs, very rarely would you get, even on an hard pitch, you won't be getting none of that. And I just, once I got used to it, it was, for me, I was like, this is lovely. Obviously, when we went to the mainland, it's totally different. You're going back into different weathers. But like, it was a culture shock, but something that I adapted to very quickly, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, it must have been things you didn't enjoy. What about some of the travel? Because, as you said, if you're travelling to the north of Spain or even anywhere in the centre of Spain from the Canary Islands, it's a long one. So in that first season, only in that first season, you had to get up to Pamplona and Osasuna. I'm looking at the most northerly games that you played. You went to Madrid for Rayo Vallecano. Sevilla was nearer. Villarreal. There was a lot of teams, fair play. There was Lleida, the Catalan team. You know, that meant that there's no way you could have been getting back. There weren't airports in some of them smaller cities. That meant that, I don't know, you could easily, I suppose, have set off for a Sunday game on a Friday or a Saturday and got back on something like the Monday or the Tuesday. I suppose things like that. It would have been the most travel and the strangest feeling build up to a game and wind down from a game you'd ever experienced.
Totally, 100%. And obviously, like you've just hit on there, in the second division, a lot of the sides are not in the big cities. So you could, i.e., 9 times out of 10, if we were playing in the north of Spain, we'd fly into Madrid, change at Madrid up to, like you said, Pamplona, Bilbao, them kind of places. And then you might have a 3 or 4 hour coach journey because even the likes of Badajoz and them sort of places, you'd fly into a lot of the time because of there wasn't, say, a connection, say, from Las Palmas direct to Seville, which you would go to go to Badajoz. You might fly into Madrid. Then you take a coach, which has got to be a good 4 hours to Badajoz, probably more. And the amount of travelling, and you're correct, we used to leave sometimes 2 days before a game, and because of the timing of the game, we might not get back until the third or fourth day. So, yeah, it was a heck of a lot of travelling and a lot of time away from the family.
You had to learn how to play chess or cards and that, because you weren't carrying, like all the players now, they've got personal DVD and video. And if a lot of elite footballers, certainly in Britain and Spain, I wouldn't know what an autobus, a coach was, you know, because they never it's all private hired planes and that kind of stuff. And we get tales of, you know, we've even had Les Ferdinand was a helicopter man and struck a deal where he could arrive at training in his helicopter, you know. So the amount of time you must have spent, Reg Varney, you were on the buses, which is just, if you ever read Shoot as a kid, and I know my audience is too young to read Shoot, but you read Shoot and there was the player profiles and various dislikes, injuries and travelling on a bus.
No, and you're correct them, but to be quite honest, all they used to do was put films on the bus, all in Spanish. Did not have a clue. And I'm laughing at some of the things, and they're looking at me and saying, you don't even understand what they're saying. I'm laughing, trying to make that. And you're correct, there wasn't none of these personal computers where people were on their phones, because there wasn't no real social media and all that then. So, yeah, it was a lot of time consuming and like I said, spending a lot of time on a bus. But you get used to it in the end. And even when you see now, we're still up till today, you get teams saying, oh, we got to fly to the Canary Islands. And from some of the ones up north, even the likes of Numancia, that was one of the worst places to get to. And I mean, if we went there December, January, I mean, it was like being back home. It was like cold, beyond cold. It was like, and for me, I was okay because but the Canarians are thinking, wow, what's this about? This is not normal.
It's not just a different city, it's a different continent altogether, because if you're up, it's nippy in Numancia at the best of times.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, one of the things you must be bored senseless of talking about is all the yellow cards and the reds. But this theme about the travel, because you know, I was able to see some of it. I wasn't watching all your second division football, but because I was interested in you as a footballer and liked what you did, both in Britain, but then subsequently when I lived here in Spain, I was able to see footage of you playing. And, you know, often the cards were for descent, the type of thing you probably would have been allowed to do in England because the referee would have known what you were saying and might have given you a bit of leeway. But all that time on a coach, all that time coming back from a game, if you're stewing angry about either you had a bad game, like not you, anyone, it's in your, that's one of the worst things about being a footballer, it's in your head and you can't get that out of your head. And if you're stewing because you think you've been hard done by a referee or whatever, That leaves you hours and hours and hours before you're back into a routine. Say you're back with your, this is how football sports people get over it. You're back with your family. Maybe you've got little kids, so you go, oh, like, the world's not so bad. There's a little one bouncing around happy to see me. Or you just get in and you get the next training session out of your system, and you give it an extra go because you're really pissed off at the referee or whatever. You must have sat stewing over things for hours so many times.
Totally. And obviously, you're probably the famous one. After 15 minutes of my debut, I get sent off. So I get a 4-game ban. And then I came back on the, obviously after the 4-game ban, and I get sent off again in the last minute. So for me, I'd been sent off once in my career in the UK. And then in the two games, I got sent off. The first one was totally ridiculous. It was totally my fault. And I think it was overexcitement because I'd signed for Las Palmas, but because of the international clearance took so long, I was training for a couple of weeks, chomping at the bit to play and probably went over the top as such. But getting back to what you're saying in terms of the yellow cards and the red cards, yeah, 90% of them was because of the language barrier. You know more about the refereeing here in Spain than me. If you raise your arms as a gesture, because people talk with their arms, and number one, I'm speaking in English. Number two, I'm raising my arms, and straight away, they've got no tolerance. They give you like a yellow card straight away. Now you're walking a tightrope. So a lot of them problems were due to language barrier.
Something I've never seen you talking about, and I'm going to get off this because discipline doesn't really interest me that much. But once you got, as a group, and there's a slight change in squad and there's a change of coach, but as a group, when you're up in the Primera, not you, but first season, 6 red cards, second season, 7 red cards, Las Palmas, not Vinny Samways. Did you carry a sort of island aggression and island pride with you wherever you went? Or are you arguing that referees just treated Las Palmas badly because they were like, you know, a little club from the middle of the ocean down in Africa? Because 13 red cards in 2 first division seasons is something at least to talk about.
The Canarians are known sort of like the Brazilians of Spain. If you look at any top player that's come through, they're gifted like beyond. But they've also got an inner sense, a bit of skill of winners. So, yeah, their mentality is a little bit different from other parts of Spain. Like, if you moved up, I always remember We go to Osasuna, Bilbao, Alaves, then Eibar, playing a British way of football because they were more direct, more back to front. And I still believe, maybe Bilbao not so much, but I still believe the Osasunas, you Alaves, they're still quite direct in the way they play. And that's because they're built differently. They're big, strong lads up there and up in the north, and you know that as well as I do.
Yeah, Vinny, I know what you mean, because up north, whether you're talking about Alaves or Eibar or Bilbao or whatever, you know, you said they're built differently, but it's flipping, it's mountain country, it's raining and cold half the year there, so it's a completely different attitude. And even if it's just for a bit of temperature, they're getting the ball long and chasing after it, and they were founded by Brits, so it's a completely different idea. And you were talking about the, you know, that island mentality that maybe brings a little bit, we'll show you. I don't know if it's inner pride as well, on top of the natural skill, but I think we're on a similar theme that we won't be put down just because we're a little island down near Africa.
Totally agree with you. And that was something that really shocked me, was the mentality of the Canarians. And not only that, they're the most warming people that I've ever come across in my life, because they could have really, and I'm not just talking supporters, I'm talking about in general the club and my teammates. They gave me so much support, because the first 6 months was really difficult. It weren't, because I had the sending offs and the cards, and nobody likes having, even though I didn't have bad publicity, of course the press are going to have to write something about it, because this Englishman's come over. And these things have happened. They stuck by me, and that's why I spent 6.5 seasons there, because of I couldn't thank them enough. And I just thoroughly enjoyed playing. It was amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because you talked about Insular, that a lot of people listening won't know was your stadium. It's now knocked down. They've got a big sort of gaping stadium that is now much less full. And even though they were highly entertaining under Kiki Setién in the Primera last time they were up, the club itself is probably about in the situation you found it in when you moved over in 97. But I want you to convey, like, the welcoming an Englishman, what it was like when you felt lonely and a little bit not settled in those first 6 months where you and your missus must have been thinking, well, is this it? Have we done the right thing? And then moving forward through the seasons, because there's a really, you talked about at the top of the interview, you had the feeling that you were joining a club with ambition. There was a forward trajectory, just gently up the league, to eventually being champions, which not enough people, I don't think, shout about when they talk about Vinny's. You know, you're a champion, you won that title, and it's called the well, isn't it? Because if you fall down that well, difficult to get out of, and you were champion. So, you know, from that first 6 months, the doubts, what was it that people did to make you feel loved and wanted?
Well, I think it was just the support, because they could have easily turned against me. They, not in a nasty way, but I mean, they could have been cold to you. But I mean, it was just the warmth that they accepted me and my family. And it was more for my family, because like we hit upon about the travelling, I was leaving my family on away games for 3 or 4 days in a totally new country, don't speak the language. And I mean, the club did everything that they could. When we was away, they arranged to take my wife to places with my little son at the time. My daughter wasn't born at that time. So it was like something, when you think, guys, this is amazing, right? Really, you've made, because if you've got an happy home, it's easy for you to go into training and feel comfortable and feel happy. But if you've got a family at home that are obviously missing home, don't get me wrong, of course they miss home at the beginning, but after a while, we moved down to the south of the island, which there was a lot more Brits. The club thought I was completely off my head. And it was like 45 minutes there and back to training, 45 minutes there. And they said to me, you can't do that. I said, what are you on about? I said, I lived in London. I lived 5 miles from the training ground. It took me an hour every morning.
Hold on, on, Vinnie. Hold on, Vinnie. The club where you had to travel 5 days for an away game was saying you couldn't travel 45 minutes.
They said to me, but everybody lives in and around the city. I said, yeah, but I don't. I said, I'm going down the south. So obviously that was a little bit, that wasn't sort of in their plan at the beginning, but it was fine. For me, the travelling wasn't a problem, but you've hit upon it there. You're talking 45 minutes, but you're talking like 4 days away on a way trip. Where does that come into it?
You had to learn quickly to say calm down, lads, in Spanish. I have to learn about training. What was training like in terms of how much with the ball? What were the drills? How easy was it to train well? Not just in a new language, because the ball is your tutor, your teammates are your tutor. But like, how different were the routines? What were the things where you just, you know, you were walking on water because you're like, yeah, I've done this at Spurs. And what were the things that you found a little bit hard?
Well, I'll tell you what for me was an amazing surprise. At the start of every training session, they started with a ronda, you know, the circle where like the two in the middle probably ain't coming out for a week because you don't get the ball off of people. So me being the full guy, I was the one always put in the middle at the beginning, and I couldn't get the ball from these guys. I'm thinking, heck, what's happening here? These keep the ball for fun, you know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, like, this was something in England, a normal training session, you go out, you do a couple of laps around, the jogging around the pitch, a little bit of stretching, and then into your practice. Where in Spain, it was like, start off with a ronda, 10, 15 minutes. I mean, proper stretching, which for me was just new. And then into, always into possession football straight away. 8 against 8, 4 against 4, depending on what day, whether they're breaking the groups up, but every day it started with possession. And there was always a libero, someone like one person with a different colour bib who played for the side who had the ball. So you was always one man less or one man more if you had the ball, if you understand. So I was always given the bib because obviously now I'm playing for both sides again. So it was learning me more about possession. I mean, keeping the ball all the time. And it was, then it would go into a lot of the time crossing and shooting. And then depending later in the week, we're going to tactics, i.e. Team play, systems and everything. And it was totally different. And the pre-seasons were totally different to in the UK, because in the UK, you didn't see a ball for the first week in pre-season. Totally changed now because of obviously football's changed in the UK as well. But for the first week in England, you don't see, or you didn't see a ball. You didn't know what a ball was. It was just pure physical running, getting your fitness up. Where in Spain, everything's done with a ball. Everything's done with a ball. Of course, you have your few longer distance runs, but nothing dramatic. Everything's done with a ball.
Can I seize on that thing that you've mentioned there? I've got a question from our sponsors coming out after this, but when I was in Belfast recently for the Super Cup, the joy, Vinny, was, and this is one of the reasons I moved to Spain, because in them days you could go to training, and it really inspired me to learn my trade by going and watching. But anyway, in Belfast recently, we were given access to both the Villarreal training session, but also the Chelsea training session. And Tuchel, towards the end of his session, had 8v8 in a small space, not half the pitch, but a quarter of the pitch, up in the far corner. So it was it was from the halfway line to the goal line where the goals were, but they only used one half of one half. So, and within that 8v8 in that space is quite busy, isn't it? It's about space and first touch and how clearly you see a pass. But he had those jokers. They call them often in Spain comodines, the guy who wears a different coloured bib. So this one was turquoise against pink, and the comodines were all in gold. But he had 2, 4, 8. He had 8 comodines. So he had one on either part where the big box touched the byline. So that's 2 at this end, 2 at that end. He had 2 facing each other halfway along the half. So in centre mid, deep midfield, but on the line, on the sideline, and two equally on the sideline and the other half. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8. And they're all wearing gold bibs. So each side of eight has got a comedian who plays just as you explained, with whichever side's got the ball. So he's your mate in one instant, then he's your enemy the next instant. When you've got 8v8 plus 8 comedians, what is that doing for them in terms? And is that an extended concept from anything you ever played at Las Palmas or Sevilla? Because I've never seen eight double-sided players like that before, ever.
No, that is exactly what you've done there, is exactly what we used to do. But the comedians, the ones on the outside and, say, parallel with the goals, were either only one touch or two touch. So if you were in trouble playing, you could fire it into them, but they would only have, depending, they would change it to, they could have maximum two touches or one touch. So it was, I think, for you and for them who were on the side to be aware where they're playing. So they're not just sitting up, standing there waiting to come back on. They're waiting there, and now they've got to be looking around, because if I fire a ball into you and you've only got one touch, 9 times out of 10, you ain't giving it back to me, because I'm giving it to you because I've got someone next to me. So you've got to now have a vision where you're going to hit your next ball. And obviously, depending on the coaches, you ain't going to get these guys to just flip it around the corner, because the coach will stop and say, hold up, what's all that about? You know what I'm saying? In Spain, when you fire at someone, you're going to have to hit a colour. You're going to have to hit a shirt that you're supposed to hit. Otherwise, they're going to ask you questions. So that was obviously brought in. So I think it's just a traditional Spanish thing that they've been doing for years. And we only have to see the results this country's had in the last God knows how many years, not only domestically, nationally as well, with a national team. What is it, two Copa Europas and a World Cup consecutively? I can't see it ever being done. Because, yeah, okay, you can say they had a dream team at the time, but you're still playing against top, top countries, you know what I'm saying? So you've still got to perform. I've got nothing but admiration and respect for Spanish football.
Look, I said I would come back to this, Vinny, and I mean, we're eating up your morning, but there's more ground to cover, I'm sorry. Our sponsors are Bet365, and they've asked us, and this touches on what I said at the beginning, where, you know, I knew why I was obsessed with Spain and why I wanted to come here, and it was the football. It wasn't the sunshine, it wasn't the flipping sangria or the paella, none of that nonsense. It was the football. But, you know, you said that you were inspired to come and play in Spain at a time when Spanish football wasn't live yet on Sky in England. It debuted in 96, and by 97, you're in Spain. So our sponsor's question is, why do you think British players don't move abroad more often? But I have to throw in the little rider as well. Why were you inspired to do so? So why you, and why do British players not copy that as often as you and I might think they should?
If you hit upon it there, where you said that probably the most watched game at the time when I was in the UK would have been the Italian league, because they were showing... I respect the Italian league, very difficult league. Not a great lover of the way they set up, but that's each. So why do I believe British players don't really... It was always the same, British players don't travel well. If you look back when the likes of Jerry Francis, Graham Souness, Ray Wilkins went to Italy, and he was a phenomenal in Italy, but... It didn't get the press that obviously that he got, because if Ray Wilkins would have been playing in Spain, they would have loved him. They called him the crab or whatever. If he was no different to what Pep Guardiola was at Barcelona. He played exactly the same way as Pep at Barcelona. And if he was playing in Spain and he was Spanish, he would have got over 100 caps for his country. And that's, okay, so only a personal opinion, but these are the kind of people that I looked up to and thought, wow, I respect it. I remember I went back to play I played against Ray Wilkins when he was player manager at QPR. And obviously he was getting on a bit there. couldn't get near the guy, could not get near him because everything was one touch. And he already knew before that ball come to him, i.e. like a shoving yester, where it was going. They'd already done their vision. It wasn't like control it. Now let me look where it's going. No, no. They already had it in their mind where it's going. So it's an hard question to answer. Why don't British players travel? Well, I really don't know. And I think that could obviously be due to foreign countries, i.e. Spain or Italy, trusting them. I don't know. I really don't know.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.